be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit Facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Welcome to Real Recognition Radio, a program designed to promote a positive work environment. Your hosts are Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. In this hour, you will be motivated to motivate. Increase morale, productivity, loyalty, and reduce turnover. Learn how some companies get it while others don't. Now, here are your hosts, Roy and Max.
Welcome to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, the show that's all about building relationships, inspiring greatness, and creating a workplace where people can thrive. I'm Max Brown, along with my colleague and friend, Roy Saunderson, and we're from Rideau's Recognition Institute. Roy, a very special show today, and I'm delighted after months and months and months that we were able to make this show happen.
Well, that's wonderful, and I think we've been known for trying to go deep on different topics along the way, and I think this is going to be a very introspective show when we really look at deeply on ourselves, you know?
Well, the interesting thing for me is the first time I saw a presentation by this individual, he was speaking at the United Nations on compassion. And I thought, if someone could do that and talk about this with such care and with the depth that he talks about it, I really wanted to meet him. And, of course, the person I'm talking about today is Chade Meng Tan, a wonderful individual. I've met him now, and I consider him a dear friend, and I'm grateful for that. Let me introduce him to everyone on our show and why I feel like this message and this show is going to be so special. He's Google's Jolly Good Fellow, and for those of you who think I'm kidding, it's not. And even in his business card, it says, which nobody can deny underneath. And he's the author of a brand new book called Search Inside Yourself. It's a great book, and I've thoroughly enjoyed the book, and just there's so much to go on with this show. But like many things in Google, Meng's unusual job title started as a joke, but eventually it became very real. And Meng was one of Google's earliest engineers. Among many other things, he helped build Google's first mobile search service. And he headed the team that kept a vigilant eye on Google search quality. And after a successful 8-year stint in engineering and 2 years at Google's education and head of personal growth, he now serves with Google's talent team. And outside of Google, Meng is the founder of Jolly Good and president of the Tan Teo Charitable Foundation, or the Tan Teo Charitable Foundation, depending on how you pronounce that in Chinese, and a small foundation dedicated to promoting peace, liberty, and enlightenment in the world. And he's a founding patron of Stanford University's Center for Compassion and Altruism Research and Education. He's a founding patron of the World Peace Festival, an advisor to a number of technology startups, and he's won many computing-related awards, including the championship of Singapore's National Software Competition. And Meng was featured on the front page of the New York Times and delivered a TED Talk at the United Nations, as I shared a moment ago. And, of course, he's met, you know, just a few people like Obama and Clinton and Carter, who happen to have been presidents of the United States or are, and the Dalai Lama, who gave him a hug for his 40th birthday. And Meng, my birthday's coming up. My 40th is coming up. Do you think we could figure something out for that?
There's no harm trying.
Okay, all right. And his personal motto is this: life is too important to be taken seriously. He has a great sense of humor. Meng, I welcome you to the show. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you, my dear friend. It's always so happy to talk to you.
Well, I feel the same way, and you know, I talk about the experience of meeting you in person last year with people now, and say, you know, when you meet someone that you just feel like they have good intentions about who you are and you want to be around them, and it's an intention that you live with on purpose, isn't it?
Yes, and it sort of became a habit.
it really did, and it was a very powerful feeling, because I think people, when they're around you, Meng, get the same feeling I did, which is because you're looking out for people. I mean, you literally tell yourself, I wish for the people around me to be happy. Isn't that true?
Yes, and not just people around me, like individually as well. Like I look at a human being and I try to remind myself, I want this person to be happy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then it became a habit.
and that intention, that feeling and intention impacts everything, doesn't it? How does that intentional desire impact your life as you've made it a habit?
Profoundly. Because if you have that mental habit, it's actually the habit that's most conducive to kindness. And kindness is something that can be, can be perceived by people unconsciously. So if you look at a human being, I think I want this person to be happy. And without doing anything, without saying anything, just thinking that, it reflects on your face. It reflects on the way you look at them. It reflects on your posture and so on. Right? And because it reflects non-verbally, people pick it up unconsciously. And so unconsciously, their experience is, I like this guy. Maybe because he's good looking. I don't know. But besides my good looks, it's like we build like very meaningful relationships in very short amount of time with this sincere goodwill. So, and as you know, having relationships at that level, it changes everything at work and in life.
It sure does. And for those of you on the show listening, thinking, gosh, this is just so warm and fuzzy. We're talking about compassion today and kindness and the way we treat each other. Think about this for a moment. Meng is now teaching and training these concepts as a leadership skill course or a leadership program at Google, which really got my attention when you spoke about this at the United Nations, Meng. This is serious stuff. Some people say, you know, this is great, but we're here to make money and run a business. And how do you counter that?
Right. So my biggest selling point of this class is that it makes you money and it helps you become successful.
Yeah.
So the main thing that we teach in Search Inside Yourself is emotional intelligence, EI. And EI has at least two aspects. One aspect is intrapersonal intelligence, which means being intelligent about yourself and your feelings and being able not just to know your emotions, but to manage them. And then the other aspect is interpersonal intelligence, which is knowing the emotions of other people and being able to manage that. Right? And immediately, the moment I say that, you already know if I have those skills, my career is going to skyrocket. Right?
Yeah.
I don't even have to expand on it. But I do it just to give a few examples. Right? For example, if I have the ability to manage a trigger, right? If the boss says something, and I have the ability to not shout back at the boss. For example, that's a very useful ability. If I had the ability to know what I want in my life, like what makes me really happy, then I know what to choose when the opportunity arises. Then I'll be happy and successful. Right? If I have the ability to influence people because I'm in tune with my own and other people's emotions, and I'm able to project a very sincere goodwill, for example, then because I have the influence, I can do more stuff and I can be more successful, right? So on. Right? So all these things we know help you succeed. And the kicker is that all these emotional skills, because they are skills, they are all trainable. And that's the good news. The better news is that they are trainable in a very short amount of time, like in our case, like a couple of weeks.
Yeah, and that was really your purpose in writing the book, wasn't it? Is to share and make this even more obtainable for lots of people.
Correct. And we didn't just write a book. We also started an education institute. Mm-hmm. We call ourselves the Search Inside Yourself Leadership Institute, SYLI, and it's pronounced as SYLI. And what's the mission of SYLI is to bring SIY out to the SYLI.org, by the way, SYLI.org. And we try to bring Search Inside Yourself out to the world. And our mission is to create enlightened leaders worldwide. And already there's a company outside of Google. They're called Plantronics. They are the makers of headsets. and the entire senior management team is going through SIY right now.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
It's fantastic. In the book, you actually write, and I quote, "Attention is the basis of all higher cognitive and emotional abilities. Therefore, any curriculum for training emotional intelligence has to begin with attention training. And the idea is to train attention to create a quality of mind that is calm and clear at the same time. That quality of mind forms the foundation for emotional intelligence." And you've mentioned it already that there are two components to emotional intelligence. But isn't it interesting how, as much as people have talked about how emotional intelligence is important at work, we're finding it's even more important than we perhaps even thought in the past.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's correct.
And so what you're developing is actually, and at Google specifically, you found that emotional intelligence for leaders of the future is critical to Google's success. Is that not correct?
Correct. And also very surprising, it turns out that even among engineers, right, emotional competencies are more responsible for stellar success in engineering than cognitive competencies. Which at first is surprising, right? You think the smart kids will win out in engineering. But it turns out it's not just a smart kids, it's a smart kids who have the right emotional skills. For example, they have the skill to influence other people. And they have the kind of emotional propensity for wanting to be challenged, for wanting to do outstanding work, for things like that. And it turns out to be a very simple reason that I found, which is that if you are doing engineering, if you want to do good work, you can do it by yourself. But if you want to do outstanding work, it almost always involves working with other people, right? Because you're building huge systems, there's no way you can do it by yourself.
Yeah.
And therefore, emotional skills such as influence, such as being able to work with other people, become really important.
Yes, and that really is key. It struck me that you write in the book that happiness is the default state of mind, that we're biologically wired to be happy. So my question really is, why are so many people so unhappy, and how do we get back to that default state of happiness then?
Right, I understand. So the reason is a couple of reasons. I think the main one is distractibility. There was a fascinating study done, I think, in Harvard by, if I remember correctly, Daniel Gilbert.
Mm-hmm.
He was the author of this very good book called Stumbling Upon Happiness or Stumbling on Happiness. Yeah.
Yes, that was a good book.
Yes, and his most important discovery of his study was that a distracted mind is a very unhappy mind. And the reverse is true. A mind that is focused is a happy mind. And by default, by habit, like most of us are distracted like all the time. So that is why, that's partially why, like, that there's this idea of flow, right? Like when you are working on something that excites you, that you're passionate about, you feel happiness.
Mm-hmm.
And part of the reason, or maybe the main reason, is because that focuses your mind, and the focused mind is a happy mind. Yeah. So distractibility is a huge thing, and so just the insight alone, right? Therefore, if you are able to train your mind to come to a place that's calm and clear at the same time, it means that immediately you reduce distractibility. Immediately you increase focus, even if it's on the breath, even if it's on just on breath alone. That focus alone increases happiness.
Mm.
Okay. But beyond that, is the idea that how should I say it? That there is this quality of mind called sukha, and sukha is translated is a Pali word and is translated as non-energetic joy.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the concept is this, the theory is this. The theory is that sukha is a very subtle joy that doesn't require energy, because that's why it's called non-energetic joy. And because it doesn't require energy, there are two aspects of it. The first aspect is it is very subtle, which is why it can only be accessed with a calm and quiet mind.
Mm-hmm.
And the second aspect is because it doesn't require energy, it's highly sustainable.
Mm.
Therefore, when your mind is focused and calm and quiet, you access sukha.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, you can access a sustainable source of happiness. So coming back to your question, why are people so unhappy? Because they haven't figured this out.
Well, that's why you're here with us today, Meng, and I'm grateful you are.
Thank you.
We have to take a quick break.
Mm-hmm.
When we come back, we'll continue this conversation and take it even deeper around what are these, some of these concepts mean, how can we help some of our listeners start to apply this now, and why this is so important, not just for us as individuals, but for our organizations as well, as we've already certainly heard so far. You're listening to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio on the Voice America Business Channel with Max Brown and Roy Saunderson, and, of course, our guest today, Meng. I'm just going to call you Meng because I just... You're such a great friend, and when I say it, I just smile.
We'll be right back.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about. Getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and myself and Max Brown. And our guest today, Chaitmeng Tan, Google's Jolly Good Fellow and author of the recent book, Search Inside Yourself. And Meng, as I listen to what you've been sharing with Max today, it's a very reflective philosophy, and sometimes can be very hard to kind of see how this can get practice in the workplace. So when somebody gets angry, for example, you know, I mean, let's face it, we get frustrated by somebody not completing a particular assignment or the project didn't turn out the way we wanted it. We can get upset because it's affecting a whole bunch of processes in the workplace. How do we get over those kind of negative emotions, mm-hmm. and put in this state of being that you've described?
Mm-hmm. Okay, I can tell you the general framework, and then I can also tell you the specific things that you can do, which you can do like today already. So the general framework is something called we call the Siberian North Railroad. So it's SBNRR, and it stands for stop, breathe, notice, reflect, respond. So if you feel anger arising or any other strong afflictive emotion, the first thing to do is stop, right? And there's a name for it. It's called a sacred pause. And this is a sacred. This is the pause. This is the moment between doing something you regret, and or not.
Uh-huh.
Right. So just stopping, whatever that means to you. And then the second thing is to breathe. And breathing. The advantage of breathing beyond. So one advantage of breathing is it brings attention away from the trigger, temporarily. Okay. So there's an element of distraction. There's also, more importantly, an element of calming. Because if you take deep breaths, you are stimulating a nerve that's called the vagus nerve.
Mm-hmm.
It runs from the base of the skull all the way to, I think, throughout the entire back.
To the heart, yeah.
To the heart, yes. And if you take deep breaths, you stimulate the vagus nerve, and that has the effect of calming down the body. It calms down the heart rate, it lowers blood pressure, and so on. It's pretty amazing. So that's breathing. And once you do that, notice what is happening in my body, what's happening in my mind, right? Just noticing. After that, reflect, right? Reflecting, they say, like, what am I going to say? Right? What's the best way to do this? What's the most positive thing to do?
Uh-huh.
And then respond. Okay? So usually it takes a bit more practice to do what I just said.
Yes.
Yeah. So I can. Before you get there, before you have time to practice, here's a very something you can use already, which is to take a break.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So for example, if you're about to say something, they're going to regret. Right. In a meeting, we are shouting at each other, right? Or if you have a direct report, you're going to shout at, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're running a meeting and two sides are going to shout at each other, take a break. Call a break, or you say, I have to go to the restroom. Or sometimes if you feel comfortable saying so, say, I have to leave this room. Otherwise, I'm going to say something I'm going to regret.
Okay.
So things like that. So first, take a break. And then other things you can do, like once you come back in the room again, if you want to, you can call it out. You can say, look, I just now was triggered, and that's what's happening. I just want to let you know. And just calling it out creates, among other things, it creates an element of transparency and trust.
Yes.
Yes. And then if you want to, beyond that, is to create ground rules. So for example, if you are running a meeting and two sides, both people, all the people working for you, there are two sides, they're about to go to war with each other.
Mm-hmm.
One thing you can do is, okay, let's set ground rules. So first, we all know that we're here, all here for the greater good, right? So even when we disagree, we attack the idea and we assume the other person is reasonable and so on.
Okay.
So these are the three steps.
And certainly very powerful to do that, and it mm-hmm. takes a lot of self-control to even realize that, to be aware, but
yes.
also to take control of oneself.
Precisely, which is why what we talked about in the previous segment, the attention training, is why
yes.
it's so important, which is why it's so fundamental. Because if your mind, you can bring your mind to a place that's calm and clear at the same time, on demand, it enables all these qualities, all these abilities.
Okay. Now, can you share for our listeners' benefits the difference that you would describe and define between mm-hmm. pleasure, mm-hmm. passion,
yes.
and higher purpose?
I can describe them in terms of sustainability. So pleasure is something which is highly unsustainable, right? Because if you have pleasure at the moment and it sort of goes away.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets worse. We habituate to it. So after a while, the same stimulus doesn't give us the same pleasure anymore. We have
right.
to get more and more stimulus. Yeah,
kind okay.
of sucks, right? So passion is a lot more sustainable. So that the engineers, for example, they can code day in, day out for years, right? And they derive their happiness from the idea of like working on something that focuses their mind. So that is passion.
Mm-hmm.
Higher purpose is even more sustainable. It is the idea that you're working on something which is deeply meaningful to you. So this is the main difference, I think, is sustainability. And I think where you're going with this question is the most important implication of this question and the answer is that most of us spend our lives in the reverse order. Right? We think that we're pursuing pleasure.
Mm-hmm.
We spend most of our time and effort and energy pursuing pleasure. And then we realize, why am I not happy? So if what I say about sustainability is correct, then we should be doing the reverse. We should be spending most of our time and effort thinking about how do I create purpose.
Yes.
And then a couple of times a week we have passion, and a couple of times once a week or once in a few weeks we have pleasure. Then it's sustainable. And then the pleasure becomes icing on the cake.
Okay.
Yeah.
So how do we create that kind of, you know, I mean, it, we hear a lot today, a lot of authors, a lot of academians are certainly speaking about the need for having purpose in the workplace, more so now than we've ever had before.
Right.
How does someone in the various jobs that some can be seem more mundane than others, how can we create that higher purpose on a regular basis so that it really is sustainable?
Right. A couple of ways. The first one, and they're not mutually exclusive. They can do them all at the same time. One is a deep self-awareness. And what does that mean? It means knowing what your highest motivations are. And then if you know that, then you can when opportunity arises, you can take advantage of it.
Okay.
So, for example, if you're an engineer at Google, and then if your deepest value is connecting people, right? And if that's your value, then the moment we start a project called Google Plus, then you will know this is it. This is the project I want to work on. Then you volunteer yourself, right? So,
okay.
So I mean, opportunities come and go, but if you have a sense of self awareness, you know how to catch them. So that's one. And related to that is awareness of how it affects other people. And there's an example. The example was I was told by example of this university where they have a group of people whose job was to just raise funds. Right? They called the alumni asking for money.
Right.
And people hated their job. So productivity was low, and people leave the job all the time. So management tried to solve the problem by since motivation is an issue, management just went down and just give them a motivational speech. Right.
Right.
Of course, it didn't work. So what happened was this. Somebody from the academia say, why don't we do this? They got, instead of having a manager to go and give them a motivation speech, they get one of the kids in school who was benefiting from a scholarship. They got this kid to talk to these people who make telephone calls and just give a 5-minute speech. And the whole speech is about, I came to college on a scholarship and I couldn't have done this without you. And if not for your work, I would never have come to college. I would never afford it, blah, blah, blah. 5 minutes. And that 5 minutes makes a huge difference in productivity and money raised in the next few weeks.
Wow.
Yeah, and what was the difference? The difference is the people now, they understand who they are impacting. They're changing people's lives.
So it really showed them a truth that allowed them to be able to be motivated to do the right things.
Yes.
Yeah, yeah. Now, Meng, from your book, you state that alignment is built upon self-awareness, which we've just been talking about,
yes.
And also that the cornerstone of knowing and aligning thyself is mindfulness. And we're hearing this term a few times in our shows lately, but how can we become more mindful in the crazy, busy, noisy world we live in?
So when we use the word mindfulness, I use it as a technical term. And the definition is paying attention moment to moment, non-judgmentally. So it is a mind that is always bringing attention back and that is free, temporarily free from judgment. Then the question is, how do you train that? It turns out it's very easy. All you have to do is to bring attention. There are two ways. The easy way is to bring attention to your breath. And every time your mind wanders away, just bring it back. Right? I mean, it's that easy. It's like doing dumbbells. Right? It's very easy. Right? Every time you just keep doing curls. But if you do that a lot, you develop something called strength. Right? And then if you do like the thing that I just told you, like bring back your attention to the breath, you develop mindfulness. So that's the easy way. There is an even easier way than that.
I'm glad.
Yeah. Which is the idea of shifting from doing to being, whatever that means to you. And for most people, it means just sitting without agenda. And that alone is a practice of mindfulness. And it gets easier. If that's not easy enough for you, you can switch between both at any time.
Wow. I'm trying to listen to my breath as we're speaking, and that's a lot harder. So I'm mindful of the things we've discussed today, and this is a very introspective philosophy that needs to become a practice. And I like some of the actual practical ideas that you've given that allow us to be able to get to that position. Not easy, but certainly I can understand how it can work. And it looks like I'm going to have to take another breath myself as we take a quick break, Meng. But for our listeners, invite you to come back in a few minutes on Riddell's Real Recognition Radio as we continue this great conversation with our guest today, Chade Meng Tan, and learn more about search inside yourself. For Riddell's Real Recognition Radio, I'm Roy Sonneson and Max Brown.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
The next generation of employees is more sophisticated about recognition. They want to make a difference to their organizations, to their environment, and to their world. Riddell offers a full suite of recognition and reward solutions tailored to meet our clients' needs strategically, technologically, and globally. Riddell's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. Together, Riddell and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Riddell client. Find us at rideau.com. Riddell is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio. If you are looking for both an inside and insightful look at what you're not seeing in media coverage of today's legal, business, and policy battles, tune into In the Court of Public Opinion with host Jim Haggerty. What happens in the public arena affects us all. Whether you're following the latest high-profile court case, corporate crisis, or are just interested in government and policy, be sure to tune in every Tuesday at 12 noon Eastern Time, 9 a.m. Pacific on the Voice America Business Channel. The witnesses are ready and the jury seated. So join us for our next session in the Court of Public Opinion.
The future of online TV is here. View exclusive content from your favorite talk radio hosts and new programs that you can't see anywhere else. Visit voiceamerica.tv today.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Sonneson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about. Getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Riddell's Real Recognition Radio with Roy Sonneson and myself, Max Brown, and of course our guest today, Chade Meng Tan, author of the New York Times best-selling Search Inside Yourself and Google's Jolly Good Fellow. Meng, what a wonderful conversation, and mindfulness really is a way of not only of being more aware of ourselves, but of also helping ourselves be more aware of the people around us as well, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
And why do we have to be more mindful this way? I do want to ask you another question around that. There's some times I feel like people become so concerned about saying, you know, until things are perfect with myself or until I can figure out things for myself, or we go so reflective on the internal side that some people actually forget to ever come out and look around and be more aware of those around them. And I don't think that's the point of mindfulness, is it? I think mindfulness is about knowing who we are so that we're also aware of those around us.
Yes, definitely correct. Yes.
Yeah. Well, it's fascinating for me. From the book, you actually write about empathy, and I'll quote again if I might, empathy increases with kindness, and kindness is the engine of empathy. It motivates you to care, and it makes you more receptive to others and them to you. The more kindness you offer to people, the better you can empathize with them. And while that might make a lot of sense when people hear it, what do you say to those who are afraid kindness exposes them to those who will simply take advantage of them, or that perhaps it'll make them vulnerable if they're in a position of influence or power, for instance, and they're afraid that being kind is not part of the role.
In fact, I think kindness actually makes you stronger, not weaker.
Mm-hmm.
But first, there's a very important point, which is being kind doesn't mean being a walkover. doesn't mean that you're not allowing people to walk over you. There is a very nice statue or representation in the context of Thai Buddhism. And if you go to some Thai temples, you see a statue of a Buddha standing, smiling, and putting his hands out like in a blocking fashion, sort of like blocking in a way. And that is a representation of fearlessness. Right? It's the idea that I'm not going to let you hurt me. At the same time, I don't hurt you back, and I'm smiling because I'm happy. And so there's a positivity, and at the same time, not being walked over.
Yes,
indeed. Yes. And it's possible to do that while being kind. So, in fact, if you're kind to people, they want to work with you. Mm. And there are studies to show that. And we don't need studies to show that, because what I'm going to say right now is obvious to everybody, which is a study that suggests that a consumer will pay a higher price, to buy from somebody he likes than to pay a lower price to buy from somebody he doesn't like.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It's obvious, right?
Yes.
Right? So kindness, even from money dollar and cents perspective, kindness has money value.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So very simply, if people like you, they want to work with you, they want to help you succeed, they want to deal with you, right? So in any situation of, let's say, a negotiation or like in a team or work together, if you're kind to people, then you have a stronger position and you have more influence.
Mm-hmm. You actually articulate this in the book by giving an example of the U.S. Navy commanders that are more positive and outgoing,
yes.
And you even suggest warmer and more social and
yes.
even gentler than those who are merely average outperform their peers as well.
Yes, that's right. And it's for a very simple reason, right? Because the more we like somebody, the more we like our boss, the harder we work for them. It's as simple as that. We go beyond what we normally need to do. And the funny thing is, I just met a couple of my friends who are Navy SEALs yesterday, and
yes.
they thank me for mentioning this. Obviously, they're nice people.
And they're nice people, and they didn't kill you, so that's always positive.
That's right.
No, that's awesome. You know, I have some wonderful friends in the military. My father's retired military, and I have a couple brothers that served, both in Iraq and have come back since, and they both talk about how they worked harder for those they really appreciated and respected, and frankly, that didn't come down to the bars or the stars on their lapel, but the way they were being treated by those people.
That's right, yeah. And my father is also retired military, and I served in the Army as well. So
yeah, that's right.
I know it's true, yeah.
That's right, absolutely. Let's talk about that for a moment. We won't go too far, but I do want to talk about, you suggest that to increase trust,
yes.
we really need to adopt the practice that you call the three assumptions.
Yes.
Could you talk about those three assumptions? I know the first one is just assume that everyone in the room is here to serve the greater good until proven otherwise, correct?
Correct. Yes.
And you declare this before you go into rooms and meetings, typically, don't you? I mean, if people don't understand the framework, you go in and say, hey, let's assume everyone here in the room is here to serve the greater good until proven otherwise.
Yes, yes. So, yeah, when I used to chair meetings, I used to do that. So that's the first assumption. Assume everybody's here to serve the greater good until proven otherwise. The second assumption is, given the first assumption, therefore, we assume that none of us have any hidden agenda until proven otherwise. And the third assumption is, given the first two assumptions, therefore, we assume we are all reasonable, even when we disagree, unless proven otherwise.
I love that.
Yeah, and I think stating that has a couple of effects. And one effect is that by stating it, it actually becomes true.
Yes.
Yes. Because people become more aware, or they try to live up to the standard. Right? And then the second thing is that when times get tough, if you state it ahead of time, there's something to go back to.
Yeah.
Yes, I see. Hey, wait, look, we all already made an assumption. We're all reasonable. Yeah, and is anybody proving otherwise? No? Okay. No.
So even though we disagree, it doesn't make us bad people. We simply disagree, and knowing those base assumptions, there must be a reason for the disagreement then.
That's right. And the trust thing, the trust and respect is extremely important, right? If you already trust, respect, and like your coworkers, then you're much more likely to give them the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I love that. I love that. Now, the truth is there's still political maneuvering around in organizations, people mm-hmm. that want to move up or they want to be aware. You actually suggest that political awareness is important.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? How do you define political awareness?
In a way, political awareness is the generalization of empathy. So empathy is a one-to-one perception. Right? You look at another person, you understand his or her feelings, and not just his or her feelings, but also where they come from. I mean, like, what motivates them? What are their resources? What are their hopes? What are their dreams? What are their fears? So things like that. Right? So in other words, there are two levels of empathy. One is the level of emotion and feeling, and the other at the level of meaning. Right? Who is this person? What does she want? Right. So this is empathy. Political awareness is to generalize that one-to-one relationship into a many-to-many relationship. Which is, I know what Joe is feeling, and this is what Jim feels about Joe, and vice versa, and this is what Sarah feels about Jim and Joe, and so on. Right. And if you have the first skill, the empathy skill, then you're more able to generalize that and look at other people and know how they feel about each other.
Mm-hmm.
And then that is political awareness.
And you talked about a very interesting story in the book where you knew a person who worked very, very hard,
mm-hmm.
who was a friend of yours, and then had a new boss come in, and the new boss was preparing to let that person go.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a delicate balance there because you were in a position where you could perhaps influence that outcome, and ultimately you did talk to the leader, right? But the way you approached it was not a threatening way to attack that person, but a way to give them insight into an experience that you had had with the individual.
Correct. So at first I felt the usual feelings. I was angry. I mean, I was really angry.
mm-hmm.
So good thing this meditation BS thing actually worked.
Because you were angry, but you stopped that part.
That's right. Yeah. So I calmed myself down, and then once I calmed myself down, there's one thing that two or three things that arose. One is the feeling of curiosity, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I became curious. Why does this person make that decision?
Right? Yeah.
And then there's an element of humility. Say maybe there's something I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then it's like, okay, if there's something I don't know, maybe I should find out.
Mm-hmm.
And then the other thing is, previously I talked about the assumption of the other person is reasonable. So I assume that this new manager, he is reasonable. And he made this decision for a reason that I don't know about. So therefore, before I judge him, I want to find out why. And so I approach him with kindness. I say, I mean, look, this other guy, he's my friend. He does good work. He's really important to me. But I know that you are reasonable. And I know you did this for a reason, and I hope to understand it, so I can help both of you.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked, and we're still friends today.
And it was a realignment of his feelings towards that person as well, right? It just completely changed.
That's right. Yeah, it's fascinating. In that case, I found something that I didn't know. I found that my friend was causing problems for his team because he was so nice to his clients, people like me, that he promises us a lot, and what does he do? He fulfills his promise, and the mm-hmm. cause of doing that is that he neglects the other things that his boss wants.
Mm-hmm.
and then his boss didn't see the other equations. Right? From his boss point of view, it's like, hey, this guy didn't do his work. But
sure.
But now he sees, oh, he didn't do his work because he's giving so much to his clients.
Yeah. And in fact, both with that realignment, mm-hmm. the job was able to be saved, his valuable talent was retained, mm-hmm. and everyone grew because of it.
That's right, yeah.
I love the mantra you often speak, and you call it Meng's magic mushroom mantra, which I'm sure has a very good story. but to love them, mm-hmm. understand them, forgive them, and then grow with them.
Yes.
Why these four elements to the mantra?
I don't know. It just seems reasonable. I found that it works really well for children and bosses.
You're awesome. Meng, I love having you on this show. We have to take another quick break, but when we come back, we're going to come back for that final piece and really look forward to talking to you about compassion. Ultimately, why is it so important? How can we embrace it to practice it and make it part of our organizational culture? And if we don't get anything else from this session or this show today, I really hope people will understand that there really is it is in their best interest to embrace this concept. I love the book. I love your work, and grateful you're here. We have to take this quick break. We're speaking with Chade Meng Tan, author of Search Inside Yourself and a Google executive who trains compassion at work. For Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, this is Max Brown and my colleague and friend Roy Saunderson, reminding you to keep it real. We'll be right back.
Be sure to friend us on Facebook. You can do it right now. Visit facebook.com/Voice America or search for us at keyword Voice America.
Relationships are the core of great businesses. Your employees are critical to the success of your business. Rideau helps you build positive relationships with your people. Rideau helps you inspire greatness in your people. We do it through the power of recognition and rewards. Rideau's clients are Intel, RBC Financial, Boeing, and Liberty Mutual. We're committed to our clients and our people. Together, Rideau and our clients create better workplaces, better businesses, and ultimately, a better world. Become a Rideau client. Find us at rideau.com. Rideau is the proud sponsor of Real Recognition Radio.
How do you become one of the best companies to work for? By appreciating people for who they are and recognizing them for what they do. That's real recognition. 82% of employees say that recognition or praise they receive at work motivates them to improve their performance. And companies who recognize their people outperform companies that don't by 30 to 40%. Those are real results. Become one of the best companies to work for. The Recognition Management Institute can help you get the results you need. For more information, visit realrecognition.com. That's realrecognition.com.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're listening to Real Recognition Radio with Roy Saunderson and S. Max Brown. This is what recognition is all about. Getting real results in the workplace through meaningful recognition solutions. Now, let's get back to the program. Here are Roy and Max.
Welcome back to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. We're finishing up our conversation today with Chade Meng Tan, our guest, and learn some just final pointers from his best-selling book, Search Inside Yourself. And Meng, this has been a very thought-provoking show today, and as Max was just saying, you even train and teach and educate people on compassion.
Mm-hmm.
How is compassion relevant in today's workplace, and how can we make it a part of the organizations we work in?
Compassion is not just good for your soul. It turns out it's very good for business. So there are a couple of reasons. I mean, there's an obvious reason that if you're compassionate and to your clients, to your customers, they come back. You earn more money. Right?
Mm-hmm.
It's very obvious. However, it gets something even more important, which is leadership. It turns out that compassion creates a condition for the best leadership ever known. So what does that mean? There is a book called Good to Great,
mm-hmm.
which is a fascinating book which documents why and how companies go from good to great. And in the book, it turns out that one of the major conditions for companies going from good to great is that those companies have this type of leaders called level 5 leaders.
Mm-hmm.
And so what are level 5 leaders? Level 5 leaders are highly competent leaders who, in addition to being good at being competent and smart and so on, they have two very important qualities. The first quality is ambition. But their ambition is not for themselves. Their ambition is for greater good. Right? And then the second quality, which is paradoxical, it is humility, personal humility. Because these people, they care about greater good, So they don't feel the need to inflate their own ego.
Mm-hmm.
So they are like they are ambitious and humble at the same time. And then, so you might ask, right? So first, how do you train that, and what has that got to do with compassion? If you tease out the factors of compassion, there are at least three factors. The first factor of compassion is an affective factor, which is I feel for you.
Mm.
A second factor is a cognitive factor, which is I understand you. The third factor is a motivational factor, which is I want to help you. And if you superimpose the three factors of compassion with the two factors of level five leadership, you find there's a match. Right? You find that the affective and the cognitive components of compassion, they lead to humility. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Caring about people, not about yourself. And then the motivational component of compassion, wanting to help people, it creates the ambition for greater good.
Wow.
So therefore, compassion is the necessary, maybe insufficient, but it's a necessary ingredient of level five leadership.
Do you think having that perspective on compassion is broader and may help some people get over the hurdle that compassion is gender specific or something touchy feely? You've gone beyond just touchy feely. You're talking about emotion, mm-hmm. cognition, and motivation. Do you think that's going to help people understand this concept that you're trying to get across?
I hope so. There's something else very important about compassion, speaking as a meditator, which is that, and this is said by many meditators, including the Dalai Lama,
mm-hmm.
which is that compassion is a happier state. And the science, the brain science shows it, that the happiest ever measured in the brain was when somebody was meditating on compassion. And in fact, compassion, the state of compassion is happier than the state of open awareness.
Hmm.
Right? Which for a meditator it should be mind blowing. Because if you think about meditation, what do you think about? You think about a guy sitting down and he's going into some sort of deep awareness.
State. Yes.
Yeah. Right. And you think, this is it, this is the highest state, happiest state. No, this is only the second happiest state. The happiest state is compassion.
Hmm.
So that preparation, right, that the peace of mind the peace of mind state is nothing except a preparation for compassion.
And compassion is really love in action then, isn't it?
Correct, yes. Huh. And yeah, for me, I find that the more peaceful my mind is, the more I have to give. So peace leads to compassion.
Okay, yeah. Okay, exciting. Mm-hmm. Listen, I want to make sure that you have a chance to tell our listeners ways in which they can learn more about Search Inside Yourself and, mm-hmm. and also connect with you. What would be some ways in which they can do that?
Yes, just go to the Silly website, Silly, SILY.org.
Wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
And I think you also have, do you have a Twitter handle too?
Yes, my Twitter handle is Chad Meng, Chademeng, which is my first name. And let me see, my personal website is chademeng.com.
Wonderful. I even saw a joke on there about how many engineers it takes to change a light bulb, or software engineers, right?
That's right, yes. None is a hardware problem.
That's right. It's a hardware problem. Listen, you talk about looking in the mirror and finding a happy person staring back, right?
Yes.
What makes you smile?
It's a freaky mirror. I'm just kidding.
Besides a freaky mirror.
What makes me smile are people, specifically people like you, my friends. Like good people out to do good things for the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So thank you.
Well, thank you. My goodness. You know, some leaders are going to be listening to this show, and they will play it back, of course, because there's a lot to reflect on.
Mm-hmm.
Where could they begin to really apply what you've taught today?
I would like to say the first thing is just read a book.
Uh-huh.
Right. So at the very least, you will know what you're getting yourself into.
Mm-hmm.
And then if you like the book, then the next thing you can try are simple practices. Like, for example, bringing attention to the breath, wishing everybody you meet to be happy, you know, simple things like that, and see if they work for you. And I like to say that everything I say is a suggestion, and everything I say is useless BS unless it works for you, unless it benefits you. Right? So if it doesn't benefit you, it's all BS. Throw the book away. However, yeah, if it works for you and you want to go to the next step, yeah, just try go to cd.org and see if you can find any offering that suits you.
That's wonderful. And I think you bring a wonderful perspective to the philosophy that you've shared. I like the practical side, because sometimes we can talk so theoretical that it doesn't seem that we can even do anything about it. So I like these practices that you've shared.
Thank you.
If there was one final thought or piece of advice that you would give our audience on search inside yourself, what would you like to leave them with them?
I think there is, but I'm trying to verbalize it. Something about everybody being, I want to feel that everybody is an agent for creating a greater world, and I'm having problem trying to verbalize it nicely.
Yes. Well, you've given us a lot of depth today, and we want to certainly thank you greatly for having been on the show. Max?
Meng, so 我的兄弟, 真感谢你.
Yes,
and for me, I think, you know, Roy, when we think about this, Meng says he wants world peace, and when you're around him, you feel it. You just know it. You believe it, and he's created many champions that way. So I appreciate what you've brought to this show and what you brought to this conversation. I'm grateful we're friends.
Thank you so much, my friend.
Thanks for being on the show today, Meng. Well, tune in for our next show, where Max and I will be continuing this wonderful discussion on building relationships, inspiring greatness, and creating workplaces where people can thrive. Max and I certainly want to invite you to send in your comments and suggestions for other great guests, and we invite you to go to rideau.com/radio. That's rideau.com/radio. And give us your feedback there. Tell us why you listen to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio, and we'll certainly send you a small token of appreciation in return. Thanks for listening to Rideau's Real Recognition Radio. For more information about the Rideau Institute, you can visit us at rideau.com. Until next time, I'm Roy Saunderson and Max Brown, reminding you to keep it real.
Thank you again for tuning in Real Recognition Radio. Please join Roy Saunderson and Max Brown again next Tuesday at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the Voice America Business Channel for more motivational tips to help your employees perform better. We'll talk again next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program, brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.